instruments and then setting fire to this, the Reichstag, the parliament building in Germany. And as you know, he was also accused of being this mental case of being a communist. This happened after even Hitler had been named chancellor and given a great deal of power, where 5 million communists were still showing their courage at the ballot. It was only then that he gained enough power to begin the repression that led to the horrible concentration camps, which indeed killed many, many communists, socialists, not only Jews, but all those who resisted the forces of fascism, which is the final state of monopoly capitalism. There is no other place for monopoly capitalism to go. Union sources say the law does not say that it was intended to handle situations where the strike is actually started. So if a back to work or work to order comes, union spokesman heads can answer the question to the legislative representative, and they made it clear that he thinks that they are not required to go back to work. But certainly we saw the 115 miners who struck bravely that were in near poverty, and they in fact were in poverty. The only union that gave them any assistance was some food help from a garment labor organization, which has been for the Soviet Union for many years. And good old Mr. Meany, who is a boss, which makes it difficult in the United States for any revolutionary ferment. You have to have a active communist party, very strong, an independent, at least active socialist movement, and an active and free trade union movement. Unfortunately, we lack some of those elements today in the United States, to say the least. Though there's some brave people that we speak with, and we'll be anxious if we could be of any assistance upon the advice of our Soviet brothers and sisters. But at this time, we saw that we would have been devastated. Our seniors would have been destroyed with the fires being set and the assassination attempts on my life and my wife. And so many children, little children, are trying their smears, their press smears, plus all of the other hard things to close our school. I suppose every agency in the United States started an investigation simultaneously against us, and looked like we could never live through it. But we have survived, thanks to socialism. The next move will probably come from President Carter at a press conference scheduled to begin within the hour. South Africa has a new prime minister. I did not catch the name. Who for 12 years served as the country's defense minister. His views are well known. He is a hardliner on racial apartheid, a fascist. Most of the leading leadership of South Africa were actually allies of Hitler during World War II, and he's a hawk on military matters. The claim that he could send the country to war if he chose, but he did not at this time. He promised to work for better relations between the races. John Voister, who retired as Prime Minister, if you want to be so kind as to call him an elected official, because of ailing health, so-called, has been nominated for the largely ceremonial post, whatever that is, I cannot detect over the news. The static is too bad. President Carter is making all the moves preparatory to ordering railway workers back to work for 60 days. Of course, I'm sure he is. Labor has begun to wake the sleeping giant of labor, something we have not seen in an apathetic America that is increasingly racist in every nook, crook, and cranny. For the last 3 days, the strike has threatened three-fourths of the U.S. labor system. Secretary Marshall speaking. The Norfolk and Western, BRAC, have been unable to reach an agreement during the past 26 hours. I am going to stay in touch with both parties and urge them to continue their negotiations. Secretary Marshall says the President has received a recommendation from the National Mediation Board, that is Secretary Marshall is of the Railway Union, to set up an emergency board under the Railway Labor Act. The Union Legislative Council, James Kennedy said, "We have been trying and busting our house to get this thing settled. Busting our rears," I think he said, "to get this thing settled, and maybe they should ask the administration, who are the really bad guys?" As we saw in our movie that we captured the best of on TV and avoided all the violence in the capitalist commercials, while it was legal to do so by closed circuit videotape, there is, for the first time in some areas, though I must admit it's minuscule and almost microscopic, a union of black and white coming out of racial concerns, not fighting for black liberation or white liberation, which is ridiculous, but are working together, as in Harlan County when they resisted the mines for working class liberation. And so it was with the miners in the United Mine Workers a few weeks ago. This is the only hope for America, and America's a dangerous giant today. The fortress America with her finger on the nuclear button and madness enough to think, like China in her idiocy, that nuclear war is thinkable. Of course, China in her plans feels that if nuclear war comes because of her massive population, she will be the winner. But it's an insane kind of concept, and in no way does she carry out sincerely her doctrine of the Third World, ridiculously trying to make the USSR as the most dangerous part of the First World, and her ridiculous overtures of the Second War, the Second World are mere exploitation and expansionism. And the Third World is more ridiculous yet, in that China has not led any liberation struggles. She was on the wrong side in Angola, the wrong side in Ethiopia. She's on the wrong side in Southeast Asia, in Kampuchea, formerly Cambodia, which has turned the nationalist element of the Khmer Rouge, has taken over and killed 2 million of the population. We are in a difficult time, but let us hope that America can awake, the sleeping giant can awake, to resist capitalism before it's too late. Said the Railway Union Legislative Council, James Kennedy, "We have been trying and busting our rears, as I said, to get this thing settled, and maybe they should ask the administration who are the bad guys." Railway Union lawyer James Kennedy, President Carter may make his decision about what to do about the rail strike at his news conference. You can hear the president live half hour from now over many of the entertainment work network stations. Well, Americans will have to set aside their soap operas for a moment and their hypnotic gloob tube to be able to listen to the facts that the labor class struggle is indeed a reality in the United States of America. The House Assassination Committee hearings of the killing of the President of Kennedy are winding down. The committee is wrapping up these hearings today, weaving together reports of organized crimes, anger at the Kennedy administration for its tough law enforcement, with hints that the mob figures may have arranged for the assassination. No mention, of course, of the numerous writers who have referred to the oil interest, who as late as the day before President Kennedy's journey to Dallas took out ads calling him a monster and calling for his annihilation. Chief Counsel Robert Blakey told U.S. organized crimes had a motive, the opportunity, and the means to carry out the plot. The testimony so far, however, has not proven that such a conspiracy exists. It's ridiculous. The Mafia were not the ones that stood to gain. Kennedy was at least more amenable to peace. He would not give the Air Force backing that Nixon and Eisenhower had requested to invade the Cuban only free territory in the Caribbean. So those who had everything to gain were the right-wing conspiracy, the multinational rulers, the elitists, the capitalists that ruled the United States. Florida crime boss Trafficante denied under oath the accusation that he had known in advance that Kennedy would be killed. Research at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston has come up with a new blood test to detect some cancers before the normal symptoms show up, says Radio BBC. I wish I had better news available, but we do not have good reception from Moscow, and we are not the slightest interested in Peking's ballyhoo and propaganda. Early detection means a better chance of cure. Stand by. Voice of, let's say, ruling class of America continued. Botha has been selected as new South African Prime Minister. Voister is stepping down for reasons of health, although his policies are expected to be continued, if not more aggressively, by Botha, a hardliner, as much a neo-fascist as Voister, who up until now has been defense minister. That's my commentary. Congressman John Conyers walked out of a Black Caucus meeting called by President Carter on how he failed him on the issue of priorities, and he said that Carter should push the Humphrey-Hawkins bill before other legislation. Conyers, this is not a matter between me and the president. This is now a question between the people who believe that the Democratic Party has an obligation to come forward with a response for joblessness, growing inflation, and constitutional justice, which is not addressed either in the gas bill or the tax bill. Conyers says President Carter will have to face the issue again when he faces black congressmen this weekend. More and more black congressmen are being harassed, according to Lieutenant Governor Dimely, our friend. He has written the book that has clearly pointed out how blacks have suffered in the dilemma of black politics. Every politician or leader who is black or minority, such as myself, has been the victim of smear investigations or outright criminal indictments, like congressmen from, I don't readily remember his name, in Michigan, who was sentenced. He's the chairman of the subcommittee on House Affairs, Black Concerned, House Affairs for Africa. Anyway, Diggs is his name. He faces 175 years and 37 felony counts. This is the kind of justice that is meted out to those who dare to speak a word. And if they dare to, like Andrew Young, they're whipped into submission. We who are Marxist-Leninists should know this, that the one thing that often causes people to lose their courage is fear of loss of reputation, or fear of death. Everyone dies at some point or another. We have lived with death at times, and yet the very next hour after the conflict was over, joy returned to our lives. It's better to live joyously for principle and to die honorably than to have to do as Andrew Young did, read off a text with his head bowed before the eyes of the nation, apologizing for his courage momentarily to speak the truth. Anyway, some U.S. delegation is to go to Cairo within 2 weeks to begin work on a peace treaty. I cannot hear. In Tel Aviv, Israelis were in long queues to sign up for the tours of Egypt. A reverse exodus is to begin as soon as the border is open. In Egypt, the military are getting ready to work on some kind of public service improvements. I've left out and made commentary a lot of the news. It's just the same old pablum. A Cleveland councilwoman says she doesn't care what the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, says. She and her neighbors will continue to call the wives of men seen talking to prostitutes, although she may be responsible for some divorces, she admits. Well, that's interesting news. I'm sure if she calls wives of men seen to talking to prostitutes, she will be able to solve the whole situation. As you know, Cleveland has a patronage mayor, a mayor who has given the old spoilage practices and given jobs to his family and important establishment friends, and he was up for recall, but the establishment was clever enough to have it on Sunday And of course, that's the religion which is the opiate of the people. That's why we are all atheist. That was the thing that lost the vote. The blacks, which represented the majority of Cleveland, were in church studying about heaven, which does not exist. This is the only heaven we'll ever have on earth, what we develop with our own sweat and blood. A Cleveland councilwoman says she does not care what the ACLU says. As I said, she's going to go on this great campaign, going to launch it throughout the nation. I love USA's campaigns. They have such meaning to them. John F. Diner, a Republican congressional candidate, has lost his radio ad. The voice sounded just like that of radio news commentator Paul Harvey. The voice is actually that of David Spencer. He says he just happens to sound like Harvey, none of which explains why the announcement began, "Hello, America," does it. Oh, there's so much, much generous news. I'm getting a little bit of Radio Moscow. Let's see. Soviet Foreign Minister Andrew Gromyko and the American Secretary of State Cyrus Vance have discussed in New York the remaining unsettling questions concerning their working out an agreement to limiting strategic defense arms, which is a priority today. Peace is a priority when you have madmen like Brzezinski and the Chinese renegade nationalist mainland, who advocate openly nuclear war as a solution for problems. Addressing the UN General Assembly, Andrew Gromyko said that the talks of the issue could be completed successfully if a sober course takes the upper hand in the United States. Meanwhile, it was reported from Geneva that the Soviet and American delegation again met today to discuss ways of limiting strategic offensive arms. May it be our deepest wishes that such much success shall come to it. Today is the first day of the work of an international concert of the liberation movement in South Africa fighting apartheid. The conference is held in connection with international, I don't catch it, against apartheid proclaimed by the United Nations speaking on the eve of the opening of the conference. The president of the World Peace Council, Chandler, and the liberator said the liberation of South Africa is one of the most important international issues of concern to all the world. Indeed, it is. It's a fascist Germany upheld by $447 billion aid from our tax dollars, which makes us have no small amount of guilt that we paid taxes in USA in the first part of this year, not to mention the billions that was also brought out by even some U.S. journalists when forced to by socialist alternative presses. That money was being smuggled by multinationals to the dread South African regime, where people live in abject poverty, where husbands and wives do not see each other from holiday, Christmas holiday to holiday, because the women live in and are the mammies that take care of the babies, the white babies of the ruling class, the middle class, the petty bourgeoisie and the bourgeoisie. They are, however, not allowed to live together, so the black male has to live outside. And in the evening, black males who work in the cities, and all blacks for that matter, have to walk often miles to nothing more than concentration camps and carry passbooks, just as Nazi Hitler's Germany. The liberation of South Africa is, I would agree with the World Peace Council, the most important international concern. The existence of the racist regime would have been impossible without large-scale support of the U.S. imperialist powers and her lackeys. Indeed so. Anyone with the right mind would also know that. The lead chairman of the Special United Nations Committee on Apartheid, Leslie Harriman, has called on all countries to step up the struggle against the racist regime in South Africa. He said in New York, it was the duty of the United Nations to press for the Africans' liberation from racism without delay. Leslie Harriman was speaking in connection with the coming day of solidarity with political prisoners in South Africa. It will be observed on October 11. There's also much world pressure needed, and particularly being championed by the vanguard of liberation, the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, for Namibia. That is why the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia voted against the United Nations solution. It does not guarantee a really independent Namibia. United Nations General Secretary feels that ratification by all countries of the International Convention on the Crime of Apartheid is a must in the objective of action against racism. This is the main conclusion he makes in his report, United Nations Circles. Draw attention to the fact that the United States, which poses a champion of human rights, has not signed the basic document. It's also readily important to note that the recent meeting on human rights conducted in Geneva, Switzerland, was not attended by two states, Zionist Israel, where the world is indicted for racism. Pity that they would practice in reverse that which was practiced on them by the Nazis. And USA, who oppose racism, not only in Israel, but in other countries of Africa and throughout the world in their puppet lackey control, also in the United States itself. Rhodesia's racist regime has embarked on a course of constant active aggression against Mozambique and Zambia, again aided by the fact that USA hypocritically, without any shame, has lifted the bar on arms limitation economic aid to Rhodesia. The Church of the Rhodesian Army Operations Wall has boasted in South Africa that there has not been a single day of the year when Rhodesian troops have not engaged in hostilities outside the country. Someone has denounced an attempt of the West to send to Africa, I think it is, more mercenaries in the interest of monopoly influences in Zimbabwe, which of course no way in the world that those two nations can be maintained except by outside military might, U.S. might, all the money, the 200 years of advancement they've had in development through capitalism. They have a great deal of wealth. The Soviet Union, barely 50 years young, then having to face a war and carry the brunt of the war, and actually, you might say, American troops were held back and allowed the massacre of 100,000 Germans in Berlin, 100,000 rather Soviets in Berlin, fighting the Nazis. Some have heard statements, as we did on the television Dresden, that even Roosevelt offered Hitler and Goebbels that if they could stop the Russian advance and kill off enough of the Soviets, they would still make a separate peace settlement with the murderer, Hitler. The corporations seek control of the continent's mineral wealth. The USA cannot survive, really, without this. The only way they survive and have their consumer advantages today is by exploiting the natural resources of other countries, making super profits. To camouflage the West claims that it is also the African countries who are interested in them, helping them with their technology. However, between 1958 and 74, the 18 African countries associated with the common market received for the purpose from the European Development Fund a ridiculously low sum, a mere $7 million. It takes tens of millions of dollars to build one medium-sized enterprise in the engineering or chemical industry. Behind the interior scheme is profiteering by the monopoly capitalists, and they do it without shame. It is the monopoly's report and not the national interest of the developing countries. The president of Syria is discussing the situation in the Arab world with the government of Kuwait, the conclusion of Israel-Egyptian separate deal at Camp David with Carter, the figurehead at least for the Trilateral Commission. The Syrian president is now touring some of the Arab countries and explaining the need for outright confrontation against Israel and Egypt if this unholy summit agreement is upheld. The front has rejected the deal. And much of President Carter's political future, say some, many commentators in fact, rest on him being able to get this manipulative deal for U.S. imperialism. Again, as you know, from yesterday, even Nixon, the open criminal who has been proven to be so, has made millions, as we reported his accounts, are in the millions now, even though his wife has had the ill health. I guess criminals do pay in the end, but that's not the purpose of socialist. We are interested in justice and the feeling it gives to us in fighting for justice. But Nixon actually has a better lead in the polls than Carter does at the present time. The front has rejected the deal. It has nothing to do with the Middle East settlement. Members of the front are Syria, Libya, Democratic Yemen, Algeria, and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the Palestinian Liberation Front. In Tripoli, the permanent secretary of All Arab People's Congress stated at its recent session that the agreements reached at Camp David show that President Sadat has, gone into the camp of the Zionists and the imperialists. France will sit down for a disarmament committee in Geneva. This has been announced after a meeting of the cabinet. In his speech, President of France said this country will help to bring world peace before too late. France, till now, has been a member of the Geneva Committee, but did not take part in it at first, according to this report. There are 21 countries. I'm about through. The news is a little longer than usual and much more staticky and difficult to get to you. There are 21 countries on the committee, and it will begin holding meetings in large starting in January. The committee was opened to new members by the decision of the special session of Young General of Disarmament held this year, of the Young General of Disarmament. The opposition broke in Nicaragua, saying peace in this country can only be restored through the resignation of dictator Somoza. The broad opposition front and the Sandinista National Liberation Front have rejected the possibility of any talks with the dictator. U.S. news media that have tried to say that, and even had the nerve to say that, all of the local opposition had been killed off in Nicaragua, so these had to be Cuban resistors, are just too ridiculous to mention. But anyway, none will have anything to do with Somoza. The Americans have already sent their special inquiry, William Jordan, to Managua. By using these tactics, the Americans expect to keep in power the dictatorial fascist regime, which is getting large American military, political, and economic aid using American weapons. The Somoza regime is conducting last reprisals against the population taking part in the rebellion. More than 10,000 citizens have already been murdered by troops trained by American subjects. My God. The Executive Committee of the Socialist Economic Community is meeting in Mongolia, I believe. Economic Integration Program, and discussing ways of extending the organization's contact with Mongolia, an alliance. As you know, the Soviet Union have many, many ethnic groups and nationalities that live perfectly in harmony. As Muhammad Ali said, the only place he had never felt racism, in one interview recently in Washington, when a TV commentator was attempting to be smart. He said, "Don't you know it was probably staged to you?" He said, "Do you believe?" Well, that's very wonderful if they can stage thousands, tens of thousands of people running out in the streets greeting me, well-dressed and well-groomed. They must have quite a bit of equipment and modern clothing and so forth to be able to make such a staging. Muhammad Ali has his own colorful way of doing these things. He is due to visit here, along with Dick Gregory, in a few months at least, and maybe earlier. The opening speech was made by, in Mongolia, by the first efforts of the Mongolian People's Revolutionary Party, the chairman of the People's Republic of Mongolia. He said that cooperation of the economic community is very difficult to understand now at this point. Economic growth of this country. The Mongolian leaders sharply criticized the socialist so-called forces of China and its attacks on Vietnam, which are obvious, and their inciting of Kampuchea, as the Khmer Rouge, as I said, which has turned nationalistic, and isn't the Kampuchea is no longer a socialist revolution and has killed a third of its population, over 2 million people. Cuba and Mongolia were praised highly. The Soviet government has sent a message to the General Assembly of the United Nations Natural Resources Conservation, which have been meeting in Soviet Central Asia. The message says that cooperation of the scientists make it possible to solve the problem of protection of the environment much more effectively, and also should better the international situation. Representatives of 103 countries are taking part in the gathering. For the fourth month on board the space platform, which is a absolute initial breakthrough, a first, the Soviet space flight is the longest so far and exceeds by 20 days their space endurance record by an American astronaut. One of the space experts says that this station has opened the way to gaining even more permanent knowledge and awareness of our world. It was impossible to regulate something not clear. Scientific laboratory on the station is very difficult for me to understand. Anyway, we know that they have been able to learn much about the world and the atmosphere. We hope they've also been able to learn some technology of defense against U.S. military aggression and clear first strike reservations, which they maintain for themselves. As we all know, the United States is one of the few nations that refused to even sign a genocide treaty, which is horrible enough. It's unimaginable that a people would refuse to sign a genocide treaty guaranteeing that they would not kill off any part of their people or other peoples. In the Soviet Union, there is a system of continuing education, including both children and adults. This was stated in an interview in Moscow by the Vice President of the Academy of Sciences. He explains that even now, young person receives a secondary education, everyone does, at the minimum, and every person goes through a refresher course once in 4 or 5 years. More than 40 million persons study at school and are trained for new professions, various courses, and so forth. As you know, the Soviet Union has also a very unique policy. A person is guaranteed the right to hold their job for 3 years, as I pointed out to you, I think, in some previous news article. They have the right to maintain their job for 3 years before they can be fired, giving them time to learn the task. No greater job security could be found any place in the world. Would that the USA had such security. And then free health guarantees and all of the other. Impossible. The final point of the day, and the news has been too long, but some wanted some commentary, so we shall give it. A talking point in U.S. government quarters today is in progress is U.S.-Chinese relations, broadening cooperation, so-called, between the two countries, and a second thaw after the first one following President Nixon's visit to China in 1972. Speculation about such relations increased as a result of the establishment of a livelier political contact between the two countries. Some growth in trade this year is expected to amount to $700 million as compared with $374 million last year, and the broadening of scientific and other exchanges. This would have been an encouraging trend if it were based on the mutual desire of both countries to promote the cause of peace and detente. Unfortunately, the latest developments, especially the recent visit to China by a U.S. government scientific delegation, gives reason to question the sincerity of the intention of the two sides. Indeed, if one is to take a look at the extensive scientific and technological cooperation program between China and the United States, which is being discussed in the U.S. press, the question may arise what either side expects to gain from the development of contacts in the field. As for the U.S., the scientific community has lately lost much of its interest in Chinese acupuncture. And there's nothing else Peking can offer in the way of technology. It is no secret that even the little that Chinese science and technology had achieved was destroyed during the reign of Mao Zedong and his zealous associates, now referred to as the Gang of Four. On the other hand, the Chinese leadership does not conceal its plans to use Western economic and scientific know-how, particularly that of the U.S. for carrying out its programs of four modernizations. The main target of that program is to modernize the Chinese armed forces, which in terms of numbers of troops are the largest in the world. So they are the real hegemony power. So it is not bilateral cooperation at all. It is in fact unilateral aid from the U.S. for China's efforts to build up her military and academic and economic potential to threaten the USSR. The talks held in Peking between China's leaders and a high-ranking U.S. delegation led by Frank Press, science and technology advisor to President Carter, who's known for his right-wing thinking, bear this out. The U.S. representatives at the talks sought to create the impression that they were discussing such innocuous things as cooperation in space research, energy production, the use of natural resources, oceanography, etc., while China's Deputy Premier Fang Yi bluntly said that U.S.-Chinese cooperation in the field of science and technology would contribute to the struggle against hegemony. This was an invitation for the United States side to participate in China's military and political programs. The worn-out thesis about hegemony was used to indicate that this cooperation would be directed against the Soviet Union. USA had better be careful. She's being used to give China the hegemony that she seeks to be the one power that remains after the nuclear holocaust that she envisions to take place and is working very hard to bring about. It would be appropriate to point out that while presenting itself as a weak country oppressed by superpowers, Peking is persistently seeking to put into practice its imperial ambitions and seizes every opportunity to press claims for foreign territories wherever possible. And any unbiased observer is aware of the dangers of the policies pursued by the Chinese leadership lately, who have completely left the communist aims of Marx and Lenin, and have gone into a nationalistic chauvinism. Shortly after carrying out a unilateral military operation aimed at seizing the Paracel Islands, China resorted to open blackmail against Japan, trying to gain control over the Senkaku Islands. Then China turned against Vietnam. Having decided to reestablish its traditional sphere of influence, Peking first set Cambodia against Vietnam, and then deliberately blowing out of all proportion the problem of resident Chinese in Vietnam, resorted to direct interference in the internal affairs of that country. The New York Times justly termed China's arrogant policy a dangerous gamble. Even the right-wing U.S. News and World Report warned the USA against China's aims. It's only to bring them into conflict between USSR and USA, says U.S. News World and Report, and that ultimately to bring about a nuclear war in which China sees herself as the winner. The United States appears to want to become involved in Peking's gamble out of desperation. In any case, Washington has approved the sale of China of military-related equipment, such as scanning facilities for geographical or geophysical rockets. It also encourages military cooperation between Peking and the United States' Western allies. Does the White House realize that in hoping to use China's expansionist ambitions to its own advantage, it overestimates its strength and underestimates the political acumen of the Chinese leaders. There was a period in the history of U.S. policy in Asia when Washington supplied raw materials and military technology to the main expansionist power in that part of the world at the beginning of the century. At that time, too, the United States hoped that it would use them in the right direction. Those hopes were dashed at Pearl Harbor. So U.S.-Chinese scientific and technological cooperation is not as safe for the U.S. national interest as it might seem at first glance, because it will eventually backfire. Of the news, interesting closing of the news. Deer defeats eagle. A huge eagle swooped on a reindeer calf which had strayed from the herd at the Omyakonsky State Farm in the Arctic Circle in the Soviet Union. Reindeer herders rushed to the scene, but before they got there, the leader of the reindeer herd had edged up on the eagle. It kicked at the bird with its hoofs, tumbled it on its back, and trampled on it angrily. By the time the herdsman reached the scene, all that was left of the eagle was a heap of feathers. That's quite unusual. Thought that would just be an interest of note. We are interested in animals and all such nature life around us. Thank you and greetings of peace and goodwill. Which is clean, such as our office and plants set out, decorative things. Be sure that all of your apartments are cleared. Some were not clean, and we have them. We'll be ringing them up in public services unless you get them straightened out by the time we get out there. Cut out all weeds, and as I told you earlier, we want that place at East House to be apple pie order. All through the vegetable stand, no unsanitary appearances. People, be sure your hair is not badly appearing. Be sure it's not matted. Be sure you have given yourself proper bathing so that you'll give the right appearance. This is essential to us as representing a socialist society and meeting with a Soviet group who is prepared to talk to us about any kind of option should we ever need it. Should we ever need it? Should we ever be pressured from any side? We want to win their friendship with certainty and with much love. You must extend your love, your courtesy, your warmth, and give the greetings. They are in the library if you're unsure. There's also something of Soviet history, just a brief synopsis of Soviet history that I think would be helpful. It takes you all the way up from the present. It only took me about, I think, about approximately 40, oh, it didn't take me that long. It didn't take me 15, 20 minutes to give it. And I hope Comrade Grubbs and Don and Trop have been able to give you some of Lenin and Marx's statements. You ought to have them, and they are. They be posted about, and then learn them. Learn them, or learn something of them themselves. Perhaps Comrade Grubbs could point you to a book that you could be reading in the pavilion area at the moment, or in the library at the moment. Some way that you could get some knowledge of quoting. It's a little belated. We should have thought of it earlier. But quotes of Lenin and Marx, particularly Lenin, will be very highly welcomed and received cordially. And even our attempts at the Soviet language impressed them. They, of course, said we had what they jokingly called a Southern accent. But we note they have a accent, too, when they speak. So some don't. Some speak it almost eloquently, but it's very rare, very rare. So don't be hesitant to use your language.